The next case is 04-1406, Akron Bar Association versus William P. Holder, Jr. Mr. Radke.
May it please the court, Tom Radke on behalf of William Holder. I'd separate my time in 10 and 5. Why are we here? How did this man, Bill Holder, get here to being under these circumstances after practicing 38 years with no violations? What happened and what brought us here? I think that the testimony reflects what happened, because we were here before and you heard the same thing, and during the same time frame. You heard about Mr. Holder's extensive colon surgery, you heard about the weeks in the hospital, the Cleveland Clinic, you heard about this. You heard about this is the exact same time frame when this other mistake occurred. And that is what can explain to this court, I believe, the situation that arose here. You have a man that's been married for over 40 years. He's raised three daughters, one a doctor, one a lawyer, one a master certified teacher. You have a man that his wife is the chairman of the board of the Children's Services, Children's Hospital, which is the elite hospital in Akron. You have a person that's given to this community greatly. Yet he had a problem here, and he admitted his problem. He clearly had a conflict here, and he admitted that, as he admitted in the other case. And what happened is, I believe it's pretty clear that he just wanted to see this case through. He started a case, and he wanted to see it through. And I understand that, and I'm asking you to understand. And I think the relators, own attorney is a perfect example of wanting to see a case through. And I say that because if there's ever a conflict, it's Mr. Gippin being on this case. And I brought it up, it's in the brief. He is a member of the firm that the bankruptcy trustee is a member of. You'll see replete in the record is the trustee's letters, and we've agreed to all that. Yet Mr. Gippin is a member of that firm, and he has not got off this case. And you got to ask yourself why. That is a conflict. But he wants to continue on with Mr. Holder's case. And we've requested before that Mr. Gippin be taken off because of the initial problem, the Buckingham Doolittle case. That was all in Holder 1. But he stayed on. He wants to continue with this case. And I'm telling you, it's a perfect example of exactly what Mr. Holder did. He wanted to continue with this case with Mr. Weaver and the Nettys. Judge Learned Hand could have come in on behalf of Mr. Netty and failed. You could not help Mr. Netty under those circumstances. He had thumbed his nose at the court. He walked out on depositions. He failed to honor what the court asked him to do time and time again. And then he hires Mr. Holder 2 weeks before the hearing. Mr. Holder was not going to save Mr. Netty from the consequences of his actions, and the judge indicated that on the record. Now, one of the major violations against him is that he talked ex parte to a judge, or did not report that conversation to a judge, talking to a judge. And you'll see in the testimony he states, I believed I talked to the judge. But he also states it could have been a law clerk or a judicial attorney, but I believe it was the judge. I didn't know him before, but that's who I took it to be. And I've checked the record, and I cannot find any violations of it on a judicial officer where an attorney turns the judge in for communicating with them. The Nettis contacted Mr. Holder for the help. They got his name from the church, a member of the church. He did not know Mr. Weaver prior to this. And then you get the findings of fact by the panel, and all they really did was adopt the relator's proposed findings of fact. And I think what the problem with that in this case turned out to be, I don't think they quite read all the proposed findings of fact and conclusions of law. Because in the trial, the hearing, Justice Wright sustained many of the objections and in fact admonished the attorneys to not go there. That's obviously in an appropriate place. And the example would be when Mr. Gippin would continually, in Holder 1 and Holder 2, bring up the fact that Mr. Holder had a violation before that was dismissed. And he brought it up again in Holder 2. And of course, Justice Wright said, that's inappropriate, Mr. Gippin. That's stricken, as it should be, because if you're found not guilty, you're found not guilty, and it's not brought up again. Yet, he continued to bring it up, and again, Mr. Gippin again put it in his findings of fact. And Justice Wright and his panel adopted that. So I think sometimes when you ask somebody else to do the work for you, sometimes there's a consequence of that. And I think we've got another bad finding of fact here. And I think this court did a very thorough review of the what I'd call Holder 1, and I'd ask the court to do the same here. And I'd ask the court to consider the relator's position and how they've responded and progressed here. And I'd ask the court to consider Mr. Holder's history in the community and his 38 years of unblemished practice.
Counsel, what is the punishment that you advocate for your client?
1 year.
I didn't see that in your brief.
Now, it says public reprimand, but I think, if you're asking me, I'm telling you, I think it should be 6 months on the first one and 6 months on this one. It's a single issue. It's a single client.
And what did the board recommend?
Indefinite.
Indefinite. And the Bar Association wants disbarment?
Yes, now.
Yeah. Okay.
And I think if you look at the case law that you have passed on under this single, really this is a single incident in terms of a single victim. And I think that disbarment would obviously be inappropriate under these facts. And I would also suggest that actually public reprimand would be appropriate in this case. Because the harm that he committed really was he violated the conflict law, the standards. No question about it. But in terms of any other violations other than not reporting contact with a judicial officer when he believed they called, other than that, there is no other violation. The funds that they find that he took, he was authorized to take. And you'll read in the IALTA records, at no point was that money ever missing from those records, ever. Yet there's a fine that he took the money. Now he is authorized to take it later on. There's a fine he took this money when it was never out of the IALTA funds. And I just think that's an incorrect finding. And I think when you read the findings proposed by the relator, it's obviously one-sided, and that's what the panel adopted and wrote. But I think when you read the justice's opinion, it's basically saying it was a serial conflict case. And I think that's a fair representation, that part of it. It was. And again, he continued to represent.
Counsel, I'm not understanding. Are you complaining about a factual determination?
Oh, absolutely, Judge.
I thought we have stipulations.
Pardon me?
Don't we have stipulations here?
Sure. We have a stipulations, and then the panel took the stipulations, and then they attached to the stipulations the relator's proposed findings of fact and conclusions of law and made that their order.
So that's what you're complaining about?
Right.
Not the stipulations?
No, the stipulations we agreed to. We don't object to that at all. That's something we worked very hard to get to try to, again, try to address the problem. And the problem was the conflict. And he stepped up to the plate and said, yeah, I did it. And this is what happened. So I think we went, you know, the whole nine yards in terms of trying to meet our responsibilities here and accept the responsibilities. I just don't believe that the proposed findings of fact should have been attached, because clearly in there there's things that are wrong. Absolutely wrong. That, you know, they may be what the relator wants to find, but they weren't found in the record as you will examine it. It was their interpretation. But the judge, on many of these findings, the judge says, sustained, get out, stop it. But yet the panel finds it because they accepted their entire version of the proposed findings of fact and conclusions of law. And I'm just going to ask the court, and I know it's going to I'm actually would ask the court to send this back.
Well, that's what Pamela Holder asked us in her brief, right? I wondered, you got different opinion.
No, I'm doing that right now, Your Honor. Okay. I'm going to ask you to send it back.
That's
I'm going to ask you to send it back with a independent relator investigation. Because this is wrong. This is wrong from the start. This is wrong because there's obviously this, I suggest to you, it's been poisoned, this whole process, by this continual venom that comes from Mr. Gippin in terms of these continually bringing up things that are inappropriate. Being on this case is inappropriate. It has sullied this whole process. And I think Mr. Holder deserves better than that. After 38 years, he deserves an independent analysis.
Well, the panel was independent, wasn't it? You disagree that the panel,
No, they were independent.
Of our Board of Commissioner Grievance and Discipline was not independent or somehow?
No, I agree. The panel was independent. Okay. I don't have any qualms with the panel.
Counsel, doesn't Mr. Holder, he admits to this behavior.
He admits to the conflict.
Pardon me?
He admits to the conflict.
Exactly.
Right. The things are the serious violations. You know, the conflict is a serious violation. I don't mean to diminish it. But some of the serious violations they find was that he took this money. He, you know, took a client's funds when, in fact, the money was in the IOLTA account the entire time. That's what the record shows. And then it goes on to show that the custodian of the money said, take it and apply it to fees. So it was never any taking of money. Yet they, in the proposed findings of fact, they say he stole this money. And that's clearly wrong. It's just wrong. And I think, I just think the court should actually just remand this entire matter back to have another hearing.
What is your response here to the statement on page 7 of the relator's objections, in which it stated that the court's confidence expressed in Holder 1 was misplaced, oral argument Holder 1 was conducted on the date thereafter Holder committed some of the worst violations found in the present proceedings, including lying to the panel concerning his accusations against Judge Baxter, if not also as other matters? What's your response to that?
Well, I'm outraged by it. I would suggest to the court that absolutely not true.
How do we know that?
If you just read the record, it's not in there. I mean, I just think that the part about you either, because you can't, you see, that's the problem with the findings. It's an and or situation. Yet, according to the panel, they find them both. And you can't find them both. You either find that Mr. Holder had an ex parte communication with a judge, or you find that he failed to communicate an ex parte communication with a judge.
Well, it's more than ex parte, it says lying. That's what caught my eye, obviously.
Well, that's just Mr. Gippin's terminology for it. And I'm not suggesting the court never wrote that.
That's not in the record, you say?
No, of course not. But I'm saying, but in many of these situations, you have an and or situation. Yet the panel adopted their findings, and they find both. You find both. It's replete with that situation. And I'd suggest to the court that that's indicative of how this went. And that's why I'm suggesting to you that the appropriate way to handle this matter today is to remand this back for further hearing. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Adgate. Mr. Chris. Okay, we have you signed in. Is Mr. Chris signing in? You're Mr. Gippin.
I'm Mr. Gippin. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I've been here.
All right. Okay.
I would like to divide my time with Mr. Chris, if I might, though, Your Honor.
All right.
May it please the court, these two cases, the one you heard almost exactly a year ago, it was heard on January 13th, 2004, and this case, are very tightly interwoven. We could not tell you at the time we were arguing this case a year ago that the other case was pending, but it was. It was getting ready for trial. It was tried on April 19th, 2004. Mr. Adgate stood up before you and made representations to you concerning Mr. Holder's remorse. He raised the issue of health, so much so that this court found in Holder 1, moreover, the depth of remorse that respondent has expressed in the proceedings before this court is encouraging and convinces us that he will not repeat these transgressions. We did state what was noted, Your Honor, Justice Moyer, in our brief, that following that, at the trial before the panel, Mr. Holder indeed lied. He gave extensive testimony about...
Was that done after January 13th?
Yes, Your Honor. The trial before the panel in the second case, the one that's before you now, Nettie, took place on April 19th, about three months.
The hearing, but the acts that... were involved in that hearing. When did they take place?
The central underlying acts take place between 2000 and 2003.
Okay.
The lying I'm talking about is the accusation against Judge Baxter.
I understand that. When did that allegedly take place?
That took place at the trial before the panel on April 19th, 2004. In other words, what happened is part of the larger set of facts here, but there was an adversary proceeding in a bankruptcy case involving Mr. Holder's clients. That case, the adversary proceeding in the whole case, was before Judge Baxter. There was a motion for default that was filed by the opposing parties. A response to that default motion was timely within the time that Mr. Holder represented the Netties. He did not respond to that default motion, and the default was entered. He then told Mr. Netty, he may also have told Mr. Weaver, that the facts on that were less clear, told them at the time that the judge had called him. The judge had called him and had told him that the default was going to be granted no matter what he filed. In other words, justifying not opposing the default. He repeated that accusation against Judge Baxter when Mr. Chris and I took his formal interview in the course of investigating the case. And then most significantly, he repeated the same lie to the panel. It became a little bit wavery. Well, I'm not exactly sure who I talked to, but I believe it was the judge. The point is that he made this most serious of accusations against a federal bankruptcy judge and did it three times and did not recant it before the panel. In other words, he allowed the record to stand that Judge Baxter had called him and had prejudged a case and had said, don't bother filing anything. Judge Baxter, we took his testimony by deposition, strongly deny that. No, he did not have a specific memory of this particular adversary proceeding. But if any of you know Judge Baxter, then the notion that he would do that, he of all judges, is absurd. And yet that lie was perpetuated by Mr. Holder under oath before the panel on April 19, 2004, 3 months after Mr. Adgate had been here arguing before you. What we have is it is pervasive conduct. Mr. Adgate concedes that what was going on and the underlying facts of Nettie were going on in the same time period as the underlying facts in Wright. That's Holder 1. The surgery that he claims was in early 2001. He was convalescing for some months after that. The facts in this case are ongoing from 2000 all the way to the time of hearing. This can't be justified by a state of health. And I think the other pervasive element of this is the disrespect for the process, if you like. In Holder 1, you noted that part of what had happened there was an attack on me, frankly. And it is noted in the decision that Mr. Holder, and this was before Mr. Adgate was involved, went so far as to file a grievance against me, which was dismissed in a day, and threatened litigation to try to stop those proceedings. And then in this case, what do we see? We see Mr. Adgate standing up and choosing to attack me, choosing to attack my integrity. The court has any questions about that, I'd be happy to explain, but there is no conflict of interest, and it is quite proper that I should be representing the Akron Bar in this case. It is an attack on me here, even before you, and most seriously, an attack on the integrity of the Board of Commissioners. Not only the panel, but the board itself is supposedly under some mystic power I have. I wave my hands. Please rule for us.
Why don't we just, so we have it on the record, why don't you tell us why there's no conflict?
Your Honor, I had been affiliated for about 25 years with the firm of Buckingham, Doolittle & Burroughs in Akron until approximately the end of April of 2000. At one time, the Buckingham firm represented Mr. Holder, although I was not involved. Mr. Holder attempted to use that allegation to initially cause me to be disqualified in the first case, which was pending. At that time, after I had left Buckingham, the panel in that case suggested strongly that should not be considered, and it was withdrawn, and I proceeded. As to the second matter, I joined the firm of Thompson, Hine, and Florey, then, and Florey, in Cleveland in 2000. I was there when this case, the second case, Nettie, began. At the start of 2004, I returned to Akron and joined the firm of Goldman and Rosen. At that time, and prior to my joining Goldman and Rosen, my partner, Mark Gertz, had been appointed the trustee in bankruptcy for the company that's involved here, Cabin Fever. There was no conflict in fact between the interests of the trustee and the interests of the Bar Association in pursuing the disciplinary matter. There was no formal request made either that I withdraw or that I be disqualified, and I did not, and I do not think it would have been proper.
When you said your partner at which firm?
My partner at Goldman and Rosen was the Chapter 7 trustee for some of the underlying entities in the Nettie case.
So that's your partner at your present firm?
Yes, sir. Right. If there are no questions about the underlying facts of this case, I think they are complicated, but hopefully the findings make it fairly clear what happened. There was essentially a concerted theft of a company here. That went on and was accompanied by conflict, by lying, by the worst kinds of violations. If there are no questions about those facts.
Has there been any attempt to make any restitution at this point?
None that we know of. I spoke with Mr. Nettie and the attorney for Mrs. Nettie 2 days ago, and there had been no restitution, nor is there any record I know of restitution in the first case.
What is the approximate amount of restitution?
Your Honor, to some extent, you can point to to direct loss, which were funds that were taken in this one collection that, by the way, there was no evidence they were ever put into an IOLTA account. We asked for the records. There was no record these funds went in. That's about $3,700. There were also legal fees, which the Netties were forced to spend, of about $10,000. as a result of this, the misuse of the company. The default judgment that was taken in the Lafferty adversary proceeding resulted in about $100,000 judgment against Mr. Netty. But what is most difficult is that the value of this first company, Cabin Fever, was destroyed. There was testimony on the record that a successor company that was doing the same business was able to pay off the debts of the first company and be sold as a going concern, which suggests that there was substantial value that was taken. But at a minimum, we would suggest that the restitution to the Netties would be at least $125,000 to $150,000, if not more.
Was there any malpractice insurance that you're aware of?
I don't know.
Thank you, Mr. Gippin.
May I yield to Mr. Chris?
Yes, Mr. Chris.
Thank you. May it please the court, Mr. Hedgate. On behalf of Mr. Gippin, an additional matter is the alleged conflict of Mr. Gippin would involve any matters with the bankruptcy case. That bankruptcy case dealt really solely with the conflict issue, which Mr. Holder admitted to. What we're seeing here is typical smoke and mirrors. The same smoke and mirrors that he fed these poor people regarding the lies he made about Judge Baxter. And the panel found that. They said false accusations against a judicial officer. What he did there was try to cover himself, tried to make this up. And when the Netties didn't buy it, and when the Netties fought it, the most appalling issue with Mr. Holder is he goes on the attack, just like they go on the attack today, just like they went on the attack in threatening the Akron Bar and Mr. Gippin. They go on the attack after the Netties. You'll see in the record how he contacts police authorities, how he contacts federal prosecutors, how he contacts everyone, how he puts this company into bankruptcy to benefit himself and another client, and how he goes after them with the type of venom and zeal that you would get in trouble for anyways, let alone a conflict situation.
Perhaps that's what your argument's about, but the board has recommended indefinite suspension. You want disbarment. Why?
I think it's clear. If you look in some of the other cases out there, Erie Huron County's Joint Certified Grievance versus Meyerhofer, this court has said that disbarment is ordinarily the sanction when an attorney's misconduct permeates his practice in a way that respondent's misconduct did in this case. That's his practice. He did the same thing in Wright. He's doing the same thing here. This court has also said in matters where just simply an attorney neglects a case and steals a client's money, that's enough for disbarment. Here he neglects to respond to the bankruptcy. Here he steals the client's money. He forges their checks because the checks are not made out to him. They're not put into the IOLTA, and the IOLTA records are part of this case. And then on top of that, he goes after these people and costs them more and more and more and more money, more time, their business, their livelihood.
In view of all that, why do you think the board recommended that the indefinite suspension run concurrently with the June 2004 suspension?
I would be surprised, since in the cases where you've actually given someone a break where they have neglected the matter and stolen money, there's usually some type of mitigating factor. The only finding of mitigation in this case today was that he was a pleasant 63-year-old man who was kind to the panel. There's no findings of any health problems. There's no offer of that. There's no issue as to credibility. No one came in to testify on his behalf. There was nothing like that in the record of this case. And I believe there was a reason that the panel found for the realtor in this case. Mr. Holder especially with his conversations regarding Judge Baxter, was completely unbelievable. And once he started on that path, there was nothing that they were going to do. I believe the appropriate sanction is disbarment.
Thank you, Mr. Chris.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Adegate, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
Yeah, I wouldn't, John. I would just like to say the point that was obvious, that when he said my partner, the people that are making money off this, his firm is making money off this, and yet now he's on this case. I think that is so inappropriate. The record is replete with it. Mr. Holder is not a thief in any way. It's appalling that they would say that. The record is clear that they said take this money. Mr. Netty had filed three previous bankruptcies before. There's no reason to believe, and he was going to do the same thing here. He was a poor businessman. No fault of Mr. Holder's.
Counsel, do you admit that your client deposited or negotiated checks that were not made out to him?
As all lawyers do, and put into your IOLTA account.
And you also, would you dispute that there was no records presented that would have supported the IOLTA containment of those funds?
That's not true. The record is replete with that. The funds were in the IOLTA account. We have provided the court with those funds, with the records.
And then your client used those funds for fee payment, correct?
Only after he was authorized by Mr. Weaver to take those funds, and that's when the money's withdrawn.
Okay, and notification to the clients that the money has come in, I have signed it, it's sitting in my old IOLTA account, it's here for your audit, that was never done, correct?
Right, because it was coming in piecemeal. In other words, he was not going to, as his testimony came out, he was not going to notify the client until the entire funds came in. He was getting it piecemeal from these people into the account, and he would just put it into the IOLTA account.
Okay.
He would have, had Mr. Weaver not said, as the testimony, had Mr. Weaver not said apply it, when the entire balance finally got there of $5,000, whatever it was, he would have applied it then and given it to the client then. But I think the issue is there is no way any theft here. Mr. Netty is just a poor businessman, and his failures are of no fault of Mr. Holder. Agrees me to hear that said. He has a conflict issue, no question, and that's what we're here for. And I'd ask the court, based on his partnership with a key principal in this case, I'd ask the court to remand this back. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Adegate. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. We'll take a brief recess.
All right. You may be seated.